I finally reached Hutan. It was rather unsatisfactory discussion because he evaded and avoided that business about the truth and didn't give very much on the essential elements. He seemed to go back to the business of back last summer that Hanare was prepared to talk with us bilaterally. We couldn't possibly have done that. He was ready to see Yost the first thing in the morning. I was very severe with him about this matter of truth, and I pointed out to him that even in talking about his own country that the United States has had for the last several years, tens of millions of dollars military assistance program for Burma that is concealed at the other end by a purchase in local currency for about 10 cents on the dollar. And that some of our people in Congress know about that, and whether they will keep silent after his statement, I don't know. He seemed to be surprised at that, but his claim that Burma was safe because it had not received outside assistance just runs right across the facts of the case where we've been giving his own country a lot of assistance. But I thought that I would ask Charlie Yost to emphasize this point of truth and make the following points, if you have just a moment. We've been following very carefully all of the indications, both private and public, of the attitudes and intentions of Hanoi and Beijing. We don't see any of the, in any of these available channels, an indication that Hanoi or Beijing is interested in discussing peaceful settlement in Vietnam on a realistic basis. There is no possibility of negotiations on a basis that would leave South Vietnam the victim of its northern neighbors, victim of aggression from its northern neighbors. A negotiation that fails could well increase the dangers to peace. If there was a meeting and it blew up in a few days, it would be further from or not closer to a peaceful settlement. Therefore, there has to be some indication that there's a reasonable possibility of success before any negotiation is worthwhile. And we just think those are lacking under present circumstances. Any idea that the United States should withdraw its forces should be linked always with the necessity for stopping the infiltration and the withdrawal of military personnel in South Vietnam. We obviously cannot undertake bilateral face-to-face discussions with Hanoi. And we're not looking for what U Thant seemed to call in his press conference a face-saver to cover a dignified withdrawal. We're looking for the safety of more than 100 smaller countries that shouldn't be left to the mercy of big neighbors. I mentioned Manchuria, and I mentioned Czechoslovakia and so forth. And that while we appreciate his concern in this problem, his readiness to be of help, the essence of the problem is North Vietnam's interference by men in arms in South Vietnam. And if he learns through any means available to him that Hanoi is ready to abandon their present effort to take over South Vietnam, we'd be most interested in knowing about it.
I think that's fine, Dean. I think it ought to be more affirmative rather than our opposing a conference. I think you could very well make each point, but do it in an affirmative way and just start out by saying that many times during the recent years, you had said as Secretary of State and the presidents had repeatedly stated that if they would leave their neighbors alone, we would be out of there the next morning. That you want any evidence that he or any other person has that is achievable or possible or likely or probable, that no one would be happier to have that kind of information than you, that you do think it's a mistake to mislead the world and to get people's hopes up by folks not having any real hard facts and only to have the balloon pop in their face and then to go to evils we know not of.
Right.
And take just what you've said there, but get yourself back to where you've been for 4 years, that you will, and any day they'll get back across the line, quit being bandits, you'll take your six-shooter off and come home.
Right. Now, there's one other point on this truth business that I ought to mention because what I have down here is pretty rough on that point. The United States government was deeply concerned that the Secretary General implied that the American people have been badly informed about South Vietnam and that the truth is being withheld from them. No people in the world have had more detailed and more continuous information, both through officials and through the intensive reporting of an uncontrolled press, than have the American people about South Vietnam. To direct the issue of truth at the American people in the face of and without mentioning the massive distortions of those who are committing aggression was noted in Washington with puzzlement and some dismay. And additionally, the Secretary General appeared to single out the American people and address remarks to them over the heads of the United States government without addressing himself to the central issue of aggression.
I just think that's excellent. I think that's just you can't be too tough. Now, did Adlai get him involved in this thing without our knowledge or consent?
No, I think what happened was that that when we talked to Adlai about the British move, we told him that that, of course, rubs out the Security Council track or the any move by the Secretary General. Now, apparently, we talked to him by phone, and we'll get him back tomorrow. But apparently, Adlai decided to wait until we had heard from about this British move before telling the Secretary General that their earlier discussion was completely off. And so I think that we are in a situation where the Secretary General may have felt that he did not get a specific answer to an informal and oral suggestion that he had made to Adlai Stevenson. We don't have any written proposals or letters or notes or communications of that sort.
Did we give Adlai any instructions in writing?
We did not on that particular point.
Did he initiate this whole thing on his own?
I think a part of it he may have. I think a part of it he might have. But I think the Secretary General has also been very...
Well, he sent us a note, you recall, and I asked somebody to answer it. How'd they answer it? By phone?
I talked to him myself and told him to cool off Utant that this matter was off because of the UK matter, and Harlan Cleveland also talked to him, but we should have put it in writing. So
did you make it clear to him that this would constitute his answer to his letter to me, which I turned over to y'all?
Yes, I think there's no question that he knew that this was our answer to his letter to you. I would have to say that I don't think we were clear enough, and we should have been in writing, that he should have not got off completely with his time, that sort of discussion. See, we were holding this British thing so tightly that we didn't want to get it in cables and things of that sort.
Now, what are we going to say about all this Utah and negotiations and everything tomorrow?
Well, I'd be inclined, in the first place, I think it would help it would probably postpone a good deal of writing on it if I were to announce that tomorrow morning that I'm having a press conference Friday morning. I would just stand for the present time on what Reedy said today. I think if we embroider it further, one way or the other, we'll just keep... I think I can deal with this in the press conference. I'd like to show you the key points tomorrow that I would make in the press conference in an opening statement and try to get everything down to their simplest possible terms and then stay with that and be prepared to talk back to the history of this thing and the fact that we've had negotiations and those negotiations reached an agreement that wasn't complied with for one day after they were signed. And reaffirm this point that the gut of the issue is this business of sending people and arms down into South Vietnam to take over the country. And when that disappears, then we can disappear.
And I think that you can take your statement and take my statement on the resolution, and then take the resolution. I think you ought to make them eat that, these guys that want to run the Congress. 30 of them stayed in McNamara all day long, and he just kept hitting them with their statements. Said, here's a simple statement we said to Congress when we sent the resolution up. We want peace in the world. We'll do anything to get it. We don't want to harass anybody. We'll come home as soon as you stop your invasion and infiltration. We do have a commitment. We're going to keep the commitment. We're going to defend these poor people from aggression. And we want the Congress to join us in uniting and show the world that we are united. And the Congress comes along and says that we approve the president's resisting aggression and making any response to any attack that's made upon him. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the policy. That was a policy then. It was a 502-2 policy. It continues a policy today. And we've repeated it every month since, some way or other, some statement or other. And then go back to Industrial Council here last week, where I pointed out we'd be fitting and measured and so forth. Or you did today. You pointed out again. We're not going to pick out target 14 for you and tell you what we're going to do about it at all, but we're willing to. This is a policy. Policy keeping commitments, policy defend them from aggression, policy standing by the side helping them, as Eisenhower promised to. And we don't plan to run out on them.
Right.
Okay.
Right.